Man, Kevin, you know how much time I wasted, dude, trying to be somebody that God had not called me to be, trying to fit in with people who didn't even care about who I really was. So here's the deal. People loved me at the time when, because people finally loved me at a certain point, right? But they didn't love me for me. They loved me for who I had become. That was not who God called me to be. And a lot of people struggling with acceptance because they're only projecting a person, a certain facade, an identity that's not even really them. It's what they want to portray in order to be accepted. That's not real love, man. That's not real friendship. These people don't really love you for you. They love the version of you that you're presenting.
Welcome to a Christian podcast. The podcast where we have Christ-centered conversations. I'm your host, Kevin Wilson. Yo, what up, family? So this is a bonus episode that Apostle Baker and I recorded on March 5th, 2021. I only share that detail because I know God and I know his timing, and he never fails to always amaze me. And even though this episode was recorded over a year ago, I'm still believing that a lot of the things spoken will be perfect for this time. And so I'm excited. Apostle Baker is a powerful man of God. Him and his wife lead a growing church in Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm excited to get into this conversation. But before that, I want to go through a couple of things. So, number one, the first episode of season 3 of A Christian Podcast drops June 22nd. So, I'm super excited. I've been waiting for you guys to hear all of the things we've been taking to Christian Podcast. For those that are new or just unfamiliar, I've been taking the podcast outside. So, I literally go in Charlotte to Freedom Park usually, and I just set up a table and some chairs and some microphones and just go out there and talk. Like, random people just pull up and we just have a discussion about Jesus, about God, about other religions. I've talked to Hindu, atheist, agnostic, Muslim, like whoever you could think of, I've talked to, and it's been super dope, and I'm just excited for you guys to hear it. So that's number one. Number two, follow us on Instagram at A Christian Podcast. And lastly, if you want to support the show, if you want to become a financial supporter, head to www.patreon.com/Kevin Wilson. Now, let's get into the episode. Apostle Baker, I am glad to have you on the show. I've been trying to get you on here for a minute. I've been busy, and of course, you are a busy man as well. So, you know, I'm just glad that our paths could finally, you know, come across in the line in the right way. So thank you, first of all, for being on here. And I just appreciate you just being willing to just share just the knowledge and insight that you have. And so, first off, I just wanted you to have a opportunity to introduce yourself. Who are you? You know, what is a modern day apostle? And just, you know, just a little bit backstory about you and who you are.
Okay. Well, first off, thank you for having me. It's a blessing to be here, and I love what you're doing. And it was really an honor to have you, you know, reach out to me to be on the show. So I'm super hyped to be here. So a little bit about me. My name is Apostle Jonathan Baker. I'm based out of Atlanta, Georgia. I am the senior leader and overseer, along with my wife, over the Goa Life Church and all of our affiliates. So basically, a little story about me, background, I guess it would be about me is, I'm not originally from Atlanta. This is where we're stationed, but I originally was born and raised in South Carolina. I was in Spartanburg County, and my parents still stay there to this day. My siblings are in the Carolinas, you know, both of us, and I'm actually the oldest of three. I grew up in church, and I had that backstory, you know, but I'm sure we'll probably get into that later. I grew up in church, so I've always been a Christian all of my life. At one point, it was super fire for the Lord, and then it was carnality as a Christian, and then back to, you know, fire, and then the Lord called me forward into what he's called me to be. And so now, I guess a little bit about being a modern day apostle. One of the things that an apostle does modern days, very similar to what it was back in the day, would be we plow, we build, we oversee. So we help plant churches, start churches, build up churches, build up leaders, and help, you know, help propel people into their destiny, but mainly dealing with the leaders. And so I think the only difference between now as a modern day apostle would be, you know, truly back in the day was more so a thing where people thought you had to be a certain age and you had to be, have a certain amount of credentials and a certain amount of degrees and all of those things. But just as it was in Bible days, whoever the Lord calls, that's who he calls. And it's really about being willing to plow and being willing to build. You have to be equipped to do those things. So, you know, that's just pretty much a small summary of what I do. And I'm happy to be, you know, in this position. I didn't get qualified for it, but the Lord saw it otherwise. So,
right. Awesome, man. Awesome. So, I watched a video on your Instagram where you kind of share your testimony. I believe you were in the car riding and, you know, you just share your testimony. It's probably about 20 something minutes long. And man, I sat through the whole thing. I was like, wow, this is amazing. And so you started to kind of share some of it as far as grew up in church and then, you know, living this life of carnality and then back to where you are now. Walk us through, because I want to talk about purpose in this episode. That is my main goal. And you inspire me as somebody that is driven by purpose, right? Christ-centered purpose. But how did you get to this place? Because like you said, I heard your video, but just walk us through that evolution of in the church, I'm wilding, yeah, and I'm back in the church.
Yeah. Okay. So like I said, I was born and raised in a Christian home. My mother and my father, they're actually ministers of the gospel themselves. My father is actually an apostle. My mother is a prophetess. And, you know, when I was growing up, that's what I was bred up into. But I've always been eager to learn about God, even from a youth. My mother says that when I was about, maybe 3 or so, I actually came to her because I've always been, you know, kind of ahead of my years. So I came to her and said, I want to learn how to read, because I was talking at a young age. And she said, oh, you want to learn how to read? And I said, yeah, I want to learn how to read so that I can read the Bible. And that was because I was seeing them read the Bible. So that's kind of like where I started, you know, just wanting to read for myself, read the Bible, listening to the Bible stories, watching, you know, the animation Bible stories and, you know, Donut Man and Veggie Tales and all of that, like all of these things, you know. And there was a period where I had an encounter with the Lord at about probably 4 years old, where it was literally like word for word, like the prophet Samuel. I went to, I was in bed and I heard my name be called, but I thought it was my mom. So I went into the room and said, yes, mother. And she said, I didn't call you. I was like, oh. Well, I thought you did. She said, no, I didn't call you. I said, okay. And so I went back to bed. Then I heard my name again, and I went back in the room and repeated the same thing. And she said, I didn't call you. But she didn't wait for 3 times. She stated, she said, this time, when you go back in your room, say, speak, Lord, thy servant hear it. And I did that at 4. And when I went back in the room, I heard the voice of God. And from that moment forward, you know, my life changed. So from 4 on up into the rest of my adolescent years, it was kind of a thing where I would be out in public with people and I would just be, you know, walking up to strangers, you know, telling them about Jesus, you know. But I was young, so people kind of were like more drawn to it because I'm a kid, you know. So yeah. Who's going to be a kid talking about Jesus, right? So it was very effective. And then there would be moments, though, when I would get a word of knowledge, unbeknownst to me, not knowing that's what it's called at the time, but I would get a word of knowledge concerning someone, for instance. There was an incident where this lady was at the Ingles in Spartanburg, and I think I was with either my mother or one of my caregivers, and the lady came up to me and said, oh, he's so cute, you know, whatever, whatever. And I says, do you know Jesus? She says, yeah, I know Jesus. I said, he loves you. And then she's like, oh, you know, thank you. And my response back was, and the Lord said he wants you to stop smoking them cigarettes. Well, I don't know the word, but she looked at me with awe, and then she started breaking down crying and said, I've been trying to quit for the longest time, and you don't even know that. How would you know I'm a smoker? You know, like, we're in the grocery store.
Yeah.
Things like that would transpire. And so that really, you know, began to be a part of my everyday life. I would pray in tongues. I got my tongues early. I was praying in tongues as a kid. I was praying in the prayer meetings. You know, like, this was my life. So time progressed. I also played music in the church. I'm very musically inclined. That's one thing that many people don't know about me, and then the other group does know, is that I love music, like, so much. I actually was on track to be an actual artist because I started as a musician. So I started in the church, playing drums at about the age of like 4. And I didn't start playing in the church till I was about 6 years old. I ended up getting my first start at my grandmother's church, and I played the drums there. And every time I came, I would play. There wasn't really no need for drums at my church because we were playing off tracks, you know, so they would sing and praise and worship off of the instrumentals and the tracks and stuff. So, you know, time kept going by, and now I'm playing drums in the church. I started playing keys in the church, and, you know, I'm just doing the whole nine. Then, I got into some drama, Christian drama, you know, like plays and stuff like that. You're talking about Jesus and stuff like that. And, you know, I just ushering. I was doing anything you could do in the church. I did sound system, ushering, anything. And I'm like 8, 9, 10 doing this. Then I preached my first sermon when I was like 9 or 10 years old, probably 10, I think 10. Yeah, this is my first time at my grandmother's church. Now, remember, I'm playing the drums. All I want to do is play the drums. But
yeah,
they said, man, you need to do something, you know. So I called myself, like, yeah, I'm gonna do it. You know, I'm gonna do it. So I go sit down, and you know, I wrote down all my own notes and read the word, and like, I'm ready, you know. And I preached that sermon, man, and so many people, you know, were like, I can't believe this kid just preached this, you know. And everybody looked at me in a different light. So at that point, everybody's like, he's on track to be a pastor. We know it. This is what he's going to be. For the longest time, everybody was just calling me prophet, because that was the first role that I knew God had called me to. Now, around that time, also, I went overseas with my late spiritual father, Apostle Satish Rabordi. And I met him when I was around the age of 6. But the relationship that we began to build came a little bit later. So when we went overseas together, that's when it really began to mold, you know, even deeper, because I would go to Columbia, South Carolina, and spend time with him. Columbia is probably like about an hour and a half from Spartanburg. So I would go up there with him and spend time with him and his children. They were all way older than me, but I would spend time there and with the kids of the church. And, you know, he really helped, you know, shape me as well in my youth when it came to the things of God. And so he said that the Lord had called for me to go overseas with him. And so, you know, they gathered up the money, fundraising and stuff like that. And we went overseas to Israel and Egypt and Dubai. And
how old are you at this time?
This time I'm about, probably about 10, 9 to 10. So I preached this sermon around the same period.
Okay.
And I went there with him, and I had a phenomenal time. And, it was just beautiful to see, like, you know, I'm the only black boy there, you know what I mean? So he was Indian, but most with us were Indian or Caucasian, and I just had a blast. So nonetheless, you know, everybody's like, oh, he's on track for ministry now for sure. And one thing I tell people is that pastors' kids are always under assault. It doesn't matter, you know, who, what pastor it is or what role that the pastor plays, the kids will always be under assault because the enemy is looking to make them not be able to fulfill the scripture in 1 Timothy 3 that says that your children should respect you and you know, you be able to manage your house well, this thing. So I didn't understand it as a child, but I do understand it now as an adult myself with children of my own. So, you know, at that time, not too long after that, some things began to transpire in the church that began to make me basically look at things differently, if we, you know, to be honest. And, you know,
was this in a negative way?
Yes, in a negative light, right. So I began to look at it, you know, differently. I began to look at church differently, church people differently. I saw a lot, I heard a lot, you know, because now I'm older and I'm cognitive of way more. So I'm able to hear conversations amongst leaders. I'm able to see things that are being done, hear things that are being said. And now I'm just looking at everything in a different space. I'm like, whoa, this is a lot, you know? And I love God, you know, at that time as well. But now I'm coming to the reality of people are not God and God is not people. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's really what pushed me over the edge, along with some family things that, you know, I had dealt with. It kind of pushed me over the edge to where, you know, I'm not really feeling this. And then I went into a little rebellious stage. And realistically, I just wanted to be heard, but nobody heard me. So I'm going to go on for it. And so, you know, from the age of about, I'm going to say about, you know, like 13 on down to about early 20s, I had a streak of, you know, just I want to do what I want to do, you know, because I feel like God loves me and I love God, but I don't trust these church folks. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
I definitely can relate when people say I've been church hurt or I don't trust the church and things of that nature. I definitely relate. However, one thing that really changed my perspective was, you know, years back when now mind you, I was on track to do music. So during this time frame between 13 and then up and around like the 15, 16 year old mark, I was really like bent on being a music artist. So I was doing remixes to records because I didn't have my own beats. And then I started working with producers and I'm putting.
So was this secular music or was this Christian?
Yes.
Secular, okay.
No Christian. Okay. I started off on Christian music. And then after that whole thing, I'm like, nah, I'm going to do, you know, I'm just going to make music. Right. And I was gifted, man. You know, I've always been gifted with my pen, you know, whether I was writing poetry or writing, you know, reading material, whatever the case may be. So I wrote it. I was writing music and people say, man, you're so lyrical. You know, I was just spitting lyrics. You know, I wasn't in it for making a hit. I wanted to really, you know, make you feel my pen because this was a way I found to express myself. And that's what I was doing with the music. So, you know, I was doing that for a time. Met a lot of people, saw a lot of things through that also. And but I never seemed to catch my break, if you get what I'm saying. I never seemed to get to that point. Like I would be right at the door and something would take place. I remember being on the West Coast and one of my guys somehow got my record over to a known celebrity in the industry. And he they set up a meeting. They were going to have us have a meeting and sit down and map out the whole, you know, contract and everything like that. And all of a sudden, the weekend of, he ends up calling back and saying something came up family emergency. And so we're going to push it back to like 2 weeks from then. And then, you know, 2 weeks from then comes and then something else happened. I'm just like, man, what's going on? No matter what I did, I always seemed to hit that wall every time. You know, one of my guys, my close friends, like my best friend, he actually was a record A&R for Universal and also for Cash Money. No matter what happened, he was like, I just can't seem to find the right one for you, the right contract for you. I'm not going to put you in a bad light, a bad mix, you know, whatever. But no matter what I did, it just didn't matter. I was always hitting the wall. And finally, you know, I got mad one day, just being transparent. I got mad one day and I looked up at God and I said, God, I don't understand. What's wrong? Like, why does my life keep going this way? I was tired, Kevin. I had been from state to state. I've been all over the place. At this time, I had lived in New York. That was like a second home for me. I had been on the West Coast doing work there. You know, I had, you know, by this time now I had moved to Atlanta before and I had lived in Atlanta and I've been, you know, involved in gang life since the age of 15, 16. So this, you know, it's been some years now and I'm building a rapport in the street. You know, even there was a point where my mother, she ended up one day we had a disagreement and, you know, this is when I knew it was bad, you know, so we had a disagreement and she, instead of viewing me like her son, she viewed me in a negative light, as in like, as if I would treat her like a regular person on the street. And that really hurt me, you know, like, you know, she made a comment like, well, you know, oh, what you gonna do? You gonna call your boys on me? And I could hear the hurt in her eyes. I mean, you know, hear the hurt in her voice and see the hurt in her eyes, as if mm-hmm. she believed that her son was not like who I am, you know? And that really, you know, that really touched me. And then this is how I kind of, like you said, knew I was wilding. I'm like, this is not good. Like, you know, why would my mother even fathom that I would do something? Yeah. You know what I mean? This is my mother. And You know, that so at that moment when I actually talked to the Lord about everything, now mind you, at this time I'm a convicted felon. Man, I got a story, dude. You can
if you care to share, can you just talk about how you got into not necessarily just a life away from God, but a life in, you know, violence and you know, where you're a felon? Like, how do you go from of course, we, you know, church hurt, I definitely understand. But look, just walk us through the transformation from church kid playing drums every Sunday, you giving words at 10 and traveling overseas doing ministry to gang violence and all of this stuff.
So a lot of that had to deal with me leaving my actual home. You know, just as a transparent moment, I ended up leaving my home at the age of like 13, 14-ish. And I was in a, I got sent off to, I wouldn't say boarding school, but like something like that, like a home, you know, with kids who are actually bad kids. Me, I had a misunderstanding with something that happened, you know, with some things. So I got sent off as like a protection mechanism, but it really actually ended up doing more harm than good. Does that make sense? Cause now it's kind of like being, it's kind of like a criminal who got sentenced to prison when really he need to be in jail until his court date come up.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
That's what happened to me. And so I got sent down there, and now I'm learning, like, the world was a crazy place for me at that point, Kevin. Like, I'm 14 years old trying to cope with reality now. I'm like, yo, I'm away from home. You know, I got sent out here. I shouldn't even be out here. And my mom is sad and everything. And then I'm sitting here looking like, I can't believe this. Like, my parents don't love me, man. Like, I just couldn't believe it because I'm around real gangsters that's smoking weed, is really in gangs at 12, 13, 14. They fight all the time. This is why they got sent there. And then I got sent there for, we just trying to keep you safe, protect you. Like, I'm like, you sent me in the belly of the beast.
You know? Like, you put me in the jungle.
I can talk about it now, you know, I'm grown now, but back then that was a, you know, a tough place for me. I remember crying, you know what I mean? And then I'm like, I can't cry too long because if these cats come in this room and see me crying, they're going to beat me up for being weak. Like, you know, I mean, like, this is, I remember getting beat up, ganged up on, all kind of stuff, like, you know, because I had been sheltered my whole life and that hurt me. You know, one thing I'll say here, this is a point that I want to make while I'm talking about my own story, is that for any parent listening, when you're raising your children, it's good to protect your children, but never over shelter them or over protect them. Because what you will find is that when they actually have a taste of reality, it'll be a cultural shock and they won't know how to function. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's good.
I was very smart. I was always the smartest kid in the room. I was always further advanced than my peers, but that did me more harm than good because I relied on my intellect and I had no social skills. I relied on my intellect and I didn't have any, like, I didn't have any defense methods. I didn't know any. So when I was being ganged up on and I was just being a good kid didn't get you far in that environment.
I can imagine that. I can imagine how everything that made you successful, you right. know, at the time is literally the opposite of what you need to survive in a place like that.
Exactly. It totally flipped. And, you know, so from that point there, you said, how did we get here? That started the downward spiral of that. You know, I was still smart. I was still taking care of my grades in high school. You know, I ended up graduating high school at the age of 15 with a 3.7 GPA because I was already ahead. So I had been homeschooled during you know, my years, and I ended up skipping two grades. And I started school early because my birthday falls late, September the 29th. So I ended up, you know, being ahead of all my peers. So, you know, I'm in high school now. And at that time, while I was still in the home, going to the local school, and now I'm really getting picked on because I'm around a bunch of high schoolers that know that I came from this home, like this boarding school, and so I'm already an outcast because of that. That's number one. Then they find out how old I am, and they feel intimidated, so they downplay me because of that. And then,
catch a break.
I couldn't. Like, and then I had glasses. You know, I didn't have the whole. I glowed up a lot, okay, you know, so that wasn't then, though. And so I was already struggling with that. So any girl I had a crush on, somebody would find out a way to, like, oh, nah, it's not happening. Like, they would be like, oh, you know, he's only, like, such and such age. Or, you know, he goes to that boarding's home. Like, that's where his home, man. He ain't got no fence. Like, all kind of crazy. Like, it was always against me, you know, and again, you know, I just wanted to fit in, you know, because I had never had the opportunity to fit in. Even when I was still in my parents' home, even in church, you know, I'm playing drums on the sound, doing ushering, but I was the good kid. So everybody still, you know how kids are, they cruel. Kids are cruel. So kids, you know, I would have half of them like me and then the other half couldn't stand me because I guess I kind of I mirrored everything that they wish they had. You know, two parents in the home, a good home, you know, excuse me, new clothes, new shoes. We're not talking about Jordans. We're not talking about brand new Nike. We ain't talking about that. We're talking about regular clothes, not nothing name brand. But I was a kept up kid, you know. So, you know, that in itself was a lot for them, you know. So they would try to brag about how long they could stay out at night and, you know, what their mom and them got them and all these things, because reality is all of this was trying to fill the void that was, you know, was still there. So I found that out, and I found that out later in life, but not during high school either. So I was just rejected there, just a bunch of rejection. And, you know, Kevin, I want to bring a point right here too. I was rejected almost my entire life, like truly. No matter what I did, it did not matter what I did. It was never good enough for the majority. And now I know, you know, everybody was like, prophet this, prophet that, you know, this, this, that. But when God has called you to a thing, rejection is a part of your story. It doesn't matter. It's going to be a part of your story. People are going to not like you for no apparent reason. It doesn't matter what you do. You can bend over backwards. They'll tell you, keep bending. You'll break your back trying to please people, right? Literally. That's the reality. And at that time, I didn't understand that because I'm still young and I'm trying to come to grips with how my world got flipped upside down. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now in high school, as I'm graduating out of high school, the only way for me to maintain airport freedom for me was I gotta stay out. So I says I can't go home because me and my parents not seen eye to eye. Now I'm tight because I got put in that situation, right? So for the longest time, I'm like, I'm beefing. Me and my pops was beefing. I'm just like, we have a great relationship now, but we was beefing about that whole thing. You know, so I graduate high school there, and I says I gotta stay out. You know, so I ended up going to college, mainly so that I could still be out of my parents' house. You know what I mean? Like, that was really why I went to school. It wasn't so I could go to school. Of course I wanted to go to school, but it wasn't really top on my list. I didn't have time to sit down and process anything. So I said, I'm going to just do this so I can stay out the way because I'm not going back, you know? And so that's what I did. But because my motives wasn't in the right place, because, I mean, I really couldn't focus the way I needed to, I ended up going to college at the age of 15, and I dropped out at the age of 16. During that time is when the streets kicked in right there. I met this guy. So this is, remember I told you I had been picked on this whole time. Well, I was at a Waffle House. One thing about me is I did have charisma. Just people just didn't like me because what was in me. You understand? So it was bigger than me. But I did have charisma. And one day, I was at a Waffle House, and some of the locals were there. You know, some college kids, you know, and then the locals showed up. Well, some of the locals, they would attend our college parties. Now, mind you, I'm young, but I'm still getting in there somehow. And, the locals were there, and one of the guys, he was gangster. He looked like one of the guys that you would try to be like. You know, he was just, you know, his name was Chuck. And he was like, you know, chilling. He was, you know, he was in there. He was just talking. I think probably he was on some drinks, you know, but he was talking, and I said something, and he like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And we just started, you know, we just instantly clicked up, right? And I don't remember how it happened, but we ended up exchanging numbers and whatever, whatever. So then he hit me up, was like, what's up, little homie? You know, whatever, whatever. He's trying to pull up on the campus and holler at the college chicks. And I'm like, yeah, I just want to see the bros again. You know what I mean? So I like, come through. We're going to pull up on them together. He like, say less. So he pulls up, and now he got new people with him. Here's the funny story, Kevin. Every time I would see these guys again, it would be a new addition. Like, it would be somebody different than the last person I saw, and that would be the next guy I would click with. So then they brought this other guy. His name was B-Hawk, and B-Hawk came through. He was cool cat. He was gangster, big-blooded. You know what I mean? Now, this is my first introduction to somebody really being gangbanger. So he pulls up, and he's on that, and you know, me and him hit it off crazy. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, because let me explain. They were everything that I wanted to be like. Mind you, I'm an intelligent kid, I'm a smart kid, but I've never been self-defense wise. I wasn't on none of that. And these guys is all of that. Like, they can hold their own. you know. So I'm like, yeah, I want to be like them. So when they pull up, you know, they rocking with me, and I'm like, oh man, look at my new role models, you know what I mean? But they're like my friends, you know. So we're kicking it, and then the next time I see them again, now because I'm starting to, you know, build a little rapport with them, you know, I'm starting to feel cooler, and you know, people are like, who is that? I'm like, oh yeah, this the bros, you know, da da da. And people's like, oh wow, you kicked it with the locals. We don't even know these cats, like, you know. So they stayed probably like 5-10 minutes down the road, like probably like 10 minutes, but you know, it was in the hood, like where they stayed. So then the next person that I met out of that crew happened to be one of the closest people in my life, who passed away probably about 2012. You know, so you know, really getting 2013. But his name was Mook. And he was different than the rest of them. He was quiet, but he was gangster, and you could tell. He was quiet. He had a good heart. And then I ended up hitting it off with him, and he would always look out. He'd come pick me up in his car, and we'd roll around the city, and we'd go places. I'd be with him, and he was tight. And I don't know why. It's like he took a liking to me, like, you know, as if I was like his little brother. You know, we wasn't too far off in age, but, you know, he was mature for his age. I was mature for my age, and there was something about him we just clicked. So now what happens is, remember I was telling you I wasn't accepted or appreciated. Now we're in a different space because I done kicked it with the locals. I'm hitting it off with the locals. So the people that was trying to play me in college now, same thing like high school, repeat. Mm-hmm. Next and follow, familiar spirits follow. They talking about, oh, this young kid, he's only 16. You know, they trying to run that car. He's only 16, you know, da da da. He's only 15, actually, at the time. And they saying all these things. Well, those guys that tried to pick on me, now I'm calling them out to the bros from the hood. So I'm like, you know, now we pull up to the college party. I'm like, yeah, so-and-so, they've got static with me. I don't understand it. You know, because I'm mad now. I'm like, I'm going to pull the homies on you. Yeah. So now they was talking loud on campus, but during the club, they weren't doing that because now the homies from the hood is here. And it ain't none of that, right? So I found my tribe. So I found who I wanted to be with, who I wanted to be around, who I wanted to kick in with. Because that was a certain level of security for me. And I found identity with them. Okay. Here's the deal. Obviously, I didn't fit in with them, but I began to do things to fit in with them. And that's kind of how I got involved in the street life. So yeah, that's, you know, that's kind of what happened. All of these guys were good people, but they was involved in the hood. They would live there. They lived there. So it's not like they was going out doing mad, crazy things. Whatever they did was a natural way of life for them. And that's how I became accustomed to even the fact that where a lot of times people have misunderstood. People like, these people are bad people. They're not bad people. They're in bad environments. And so what they do is a way of life for them. And so in order for them to change, somebody has to show them a different way of life. That's all it really is. So I ended up getting a spot out there. My mother helped me, you know, they helped me get a spot out there. Cause now I got kicked off campus. Yeah, I don't even remember. I did some crazy to my roommate. I don't even remember how that happened. The devil possessed me. I'm not gonna lie. I don't know what, something about a wallet or something. I put a wallet in the microwave, but the plastic caught on fire. Like, yeah, like, no lie. I don't even know. To this day, I would never do that again. But I did it. And that, now, really, people didn't like me. I can't stand this cat. Like, you know, like, it was like, this is crazy. So now I ain't got no choice, but I'm an outsider. I'm an outcast. Now I'm kicking it with, you know, the gangsters, you know, whatever, whatever. But I got banned from that social group. So now I'm with this social group. And, you know, the black people still love me because the guy did it too. It was like white or whatever. So they was like, whatever.
You know? Okay.
So that's what happened. So, long story short, life continued that way. After I dropped out of school, went back to my area, my hometown, and now I'm, you know, I'm involved in the street life there with some new me there. And life, it just kept speeding up. Joined the gang. I was already gang affiliated, then I actually joined the gang, you know, and it becoming blood, and I was dealing with a lot of things. And things just, I was involved with some surly characters, man. Like, you know, like, it was, no matter what happened, I always surrounded myself with those types of people, but because that's where I found my identity at, right? And so when you ask the question, how does one go from church to this? What happened was I was even rejected in the church by my peers. So I found my identity in the street. That's really, so, you know, that's kind of where everything led to. Catching the felony, again, that was dumb on my part. Yeah, I mean, it should have never happened. But I made a bad decision. Now I'm feeling myself. I done got gangster with it. You know, I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm going to go rob the plug today. And that's what I attempted to do. And I did attempt it, and I kicked the door. But I went in with a guy who wasn't really on the same type of frame of mind as me. He said it, but he wasn't really with me. And, you know, he belling and that. So I'm like, all right, we can't go through with this, though, because it's just me. And so what happened was the dealer's girl was a white woman. And so they called the cops, and she played the story like on some like, oh, my God, these two black boys just started to hit my house. Really, a boyfriend is the plug. You know, it went bad for me. Like, you know, like they end up finding us, the dude car cut off. This was a wake up call from God right here. Like the dude car cut off, like just stopped working. All right. And the police pull up on us while we trying to fix the car. Right.
Oh man.
Like, oh man, this can't be life, right? The mask is in the car, like everything, it's like it's over with. Like the police,
it's all bad. Like, it's all
heard
bad.
A report about your some people, black guys down the street, and y'all fit the description. I'm like, oh, nah. Let me tell you, Kevin, God had his hand on my life even then, because I was strapped that day. And I jumped the fence. And I threw my gun over in front of me. I'm telling you, like, no lie to you. I threw that gun over the fence. And I jumped. And I looked at it. It was a clear path. It was no, the grass had been cut, everything. I looked at it. I looked down. I jumped over the fence. And when I looked back down, my gun was nowhere to be found. I searched that space for about two more minutes to find out where my pistol had disappeared to. And it was not there. And do you know that the cops searched that area because the woman told them one of them had a gun? And they searched the area. They had me on camera with a gun. They had everything. They searched the brush. They searched everything and could not find that firearm. And they was mad, man. They came into me in the interrogation room, man. I'm telling you, man, I mean, pissed. They said, we know you have it. Your man's over there and confessed that you did it, because he did. I even heard him through the wall. He was super thin. He was like, oh, yeah, this was my idea. I told him not to bring the gun, da da da. Like, he was spilling everything. And this coming in, she like, it's over with, Jack. You going to jail today. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I'm playing the whole nine. And she's like, we got you on camera. We got everything. You might as well go and fess up. I said, I'm not saying nothing. I need my lawyer, right? And she got mad. They cuffed me up, sent me down to processing. I ended up being told by the public defender that I was facing 10 years because of illegal possession of a firearm, breaking and entering, attempted armed robbery, you know, all of these things. They pulling up everything. They said the dude then wrote a confession on me, so he's written a statement. It's not looking good for you.
How old are you?
This was at 17. I'll never forget this, man. I went to court, and my mother was in court, and she was crying, and she was like, Lord, just please, you know, for my son. And I remember the judge saying, you know, so what do you have to say for yourself? And I made my statement. I said whatever I needed to say, da da da. My mother said, Jan, if I may. I ain't never seen this. He let my mother come up there, you know, like literally let my mother come up and stand. Said, Miss Baker, what do you have to say, Mrs. Baker? She said, my boy is a good boy, and she was fighting back tears. She said, he's never been in trouble with the law before. She said, he's a smart child. He graduated high school at 15 years old. He done had a rough life in the last couple of years, and I don't know what's going on with him now. She said, but Your Honor, this is not my son. She said, and I know that he would keep his nose clean if you just give him a chance. She said, please, he has never gotten in any trouble. And that judge looked at my mom, and I'll never forget before we got in the courtroom, they said, he's having a bad day today. And he sent somebody to jail for something simple that day. I literally right before me. And I'm like, it's over here for me, kid. And he looked at my mother, and he looked at me, and he said, son, you have a great mother. And he said, you're going to get it. I better ever see you in this courtroom again. And he looked at the clerk and said, give him 2 years federal probation, put it under the Youth Offenders Act. Slam the gavel, sent me out. Grace of God, man. I mean, and to this day, you know, I caught the felony despite what he said. And that's a whole nother story. But the clerk wrote it wrong. You know, I'm even talking to my people in law enforcement and all of that now about getting that reversed. So I had to deal with that for years of my life just off of a wrong decision I made that ended up putting a permanent stain on my record. because of faith, you know. So, you know, down the road.
Man. So many places to go. So sticking to the topic of purpose, there's so many, man. Talk about how you came out of that. Like how, because I mean, you're an apostle, you pastor a church, you are a leader, you know, in the church and a influential leader at that. And so, you know, how you go from boom, you know, it's felony.
Yeah.
And now you're here talking to me. So how, you know, talk about that.
Truly, that moment happened with what I was referring to earlier about when I said, Lord, why is my life happening this way? What's going on? Nothing that I did panned out. None of my relationships went the way I wanted them to. I was searching for love in all the wrong places. I didn't have stability. I was constantly finding myself going back in circles to the same things. You know, start here, doesn't pan out, go to another place. Start here, doesn't work out, go to the next place, go back to a place. It was just always a constant revolving door. Excuse me, I was super talented, so I didn't understand it because I said, I know God gave me this gift. Excuse me, but what I didn't understand is that God does not give us gifts for us to do what we want with them. God gives us gifts so we can glorify him.
Yep.
And so me trying to use that God, you gave me the gift excuse wasn't going to pan out with him because he said, I didn't give you the gift so that you can make it, so that you can screw a bunch of women, have a bunch of money, do whatever you want to do and say, thank you, Jesus, at the end of it. That's not how it works.
Right.
So again, I'm looking at, well, everybody else doing it. And he's like, that's not my plan for you though. And here's the deal, Kevin. We all have choices. Everybody has free will. But the reality is that some people, God will block your every move.
Yeah.
No matter what you do. Pookie and Cuckoo and Peanut and all of them can do whatever they want to do and do the same thing you're doing and take it far. But for some reason, you might never get to do it. You do a little thing and get jammed up.
Yep.
That was my life. And, you know, I didn't get it. And then so that day when I said, Lord, why is this happening to me? Why is my life this way? I mean, I was angry with God. And I remember him saying in response to my question, he said, when are you going to do what I called you to do? And I said, what? That's not what I asked. And
I ain't come here for that.
You know what I'm saying? At this time. And he said, when are you going to do what I called you to do? And I said, and immediately a plethora of thoughts ran through my head. So I try to back it up by saying, well, God, I still have time and I'm going to do it. And, you know, I just need more time, but I promise I'm going to get it together and da da da. So Lord Jesus Christ ran an audio back to me of my own self, saying this to him years in repetition, like year after year, saying this when he would ask me the similar question. And I hadn't realized that I had done it. So when I heard myself playing in my own head, back to back, an audio that only he would have, I felt away. Because now, one thing I prided myself on, Kevin, was never being a liar, not even in the streets. I didn't lie to women. I told them straight up what it was. I didn't lie to dealers. I told them what it was. I didn't lie to customers. I told them what it was. So now I'm like, I sound like a liar. So I'm like, you calling me a liar? You know, like that's my response to God, you know, and obviously it's the same thing. So I'm like, bet. You know, I'm mad now. So I'm like, bet. I'm gonna quit everything. Coach, I'm gonna show you. You know, that's what I told God. I'm a God. I was trying to prove a point to God. Well, unbeknownst to me trying to prove a point to God was doing everything he wanted me to do all along. So I immediately quit smoking. Quit drinking. I poured out my liquor bottles down the drain. I stopped cursing to the best of my ability. That took a little while, but I started curving the main thing. You know, you know,
just a little baby curse word.
I went celibate. Me and my wife now, but at the time we was dating a little bit, and we was just, you know. You know, he was going through that, was that whole deal. And you know, and she really was very influential in this turning point because she had prayed and fasted for me while I was on the West Coast when that deal fell through. But I didn't know that. So when I got back to Georgia, I come in the bathroom and find out that she had sticky notes all over the mirror. And they had prayer points for me. And everything that she had prayed, when I finally woke up and had my epiphany with God, I looked at the mirror and saw that everything she had prayed went in line with what was happening.
Wow.
Literally, that woman got laid on her face for me. And so I truly was like, wow. So we begin to help sharpen each other's faith, you know, and that really helped me a lot also. You know, some people believe that, you know, no, you got to already be whole to come together. And I can't agree with that because I believe that God uses people sometimes to help you get to where you need to be and vice versa. Iron supposed to sharpen iron. And that's really what me and my wife experienced before we was actually, you know, engaged and married. And so that's kind of when it began, when I had that epiphany with the Lord. I was trying to prove God a point. And, you know, I remember, you know, just getting diving back into my Bible and beginning to study the scriptures all over again and really, you know, really reading and praying and trying to figure everything out. And God began to accelerate my understanding and my wisdom. It was a different kind of understanding and revelation. And I ended up saying to the Lord, you know, God, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. And so God took that literal. And he said, you know, I want you to start Bible study online. And I was like, oh, Lord, no. We, it's Bible study online. And, you know, but I'm like, okay, Lord, whatever you want me to do, I'm going to do it. So sure, I'll do it. So says, yeah, I'll do it. So I went online and yo, you'd be surprised, Kevin, people was actually listening, they was tuning in, but some people, man, they was looking at me and going, man, just a couple weeks ago, dude, you was like, you know what I mean? They're like, what is this?
He was out in the street.
So they're like, yeah. I'm not finding this. And so people was making fun of it and laughing at it. Even some of the homies was like laughing and making fun of me and all kind of stuff. And girls that I was dealing with before, they was laughing and making fun, like, hey, this is a joke. You for real, Jesus? You really rocking with Jesus now? You know, and it was just, you know, it was just, nobody really rocked with it. So you know, it just, nobody understood it. Well, I didn't care. I was like, I'm going to do whatever God is telling me to do, and whatever he tells me to do, I'm going to be secure in that. So nonetheless, we started doing it online, and then God speaks to me again. Now, mind you, during this period, I called back. Remember the Apostle Tish that I went overseas with, my late spiritual father? I get back in touch with him during this time. Me and my dad are now building a relationship over from the age of 18 upwards. So we had started mending our relationship. So now this time we're pretty much solid. And I'm like, Pop, I don't know what to do, but I know God, I need covering. I need to be in the right place. And he says, the Lord is telling me, you need to call our city. So I ended up calling a man and he answered, yo, Kev, this was one of the busiest men I've ever met in my life. He answered on the first ring. And as if he had been expecting me. And when I talked to him, he goes, you know, basically he had been expecting me, you know, he'd been praying and he found out that, you know, this is something that I was new to, but not to him. He had been praying on this. He had been hearing the word of the Lord on this. He had a word of knowledge that I was coming, and it just was a beautiful transition. So as I was doing the Bible study online, God told me to go to in-person Bible study. And now I'm really like, okay, now I don't know about this. So I end up calling him and asking him, you know, like, God told me to do that. Like, what do you think? He was like, yes, it's time. And I'm like, what? This is super fast. Like, this is a lot, you know? But long story short, I did it. I was just going to be obedient. So I told God, my excuse was, well, how am I going to do this? Because who going to, like, he told me to do Bible study in Atlanta, and I live all the way in Paulding County, Dallas, Ackworth. So I'm like, who's going to, nobody's coming out here. So I definitely got to go to Atlanta, and who's going to host this thing? So I put it, he says, just put it online, say that you're doing it, and it'll come through. I put it out. Yo, no lie, my man. One of the guys that I used to bag up with, one of my bros in the street, one of the guys I used to bag up with, the very same apartment we used to serve out of, he called me and told me, yo, you can do it at my house.
Wow.
Wow. You know what I mean? So I'm sitting at the same table we used to bag up at, preaching the word of God, teaching
the word.
Like four people. You know, it's just me, my baby, my guy, his girl, and one other person, and that's how it started. And everything began to unfold from there. You know, I was doing Bible studies in an apartment, and you know, I was doing the whole nine, and then the Lord told me to go to Sunday service, and he had to speak that through like three people because I wasn't hearing that. My wife mentioned it. One of the people that was coming to the studies mentioned it. Then Apostle Tish mentioned it, and I'm like, all right, God, I can't shake you now. I got to do it. So I did it, you know, and I started, and that's really where I got my start. So, you know, the day of reckoning came when I had an ultimatum with God. I basically was angry about the way my life was going, and God really in real life gave me Proverbs 16:3, which says that people ruin their own lives and then are angry at the Lord. And he showed me that in real life. Like, look, dude, I'm not the source of your problems, but I am the source of your solution.
Wow. That's awesome. So that's an amazing testimony. I appreciate you for sharing it. What would you say to the person that has been fighting their purpose or fighting their call, the call that God has placed on their life? To prevent them from not having to get to that point, to prevent them from not having to, you know, get to that point where God has to show them or everything has to get messed up before they can see, like, how would you encourage that person that's just like, I don't really want to do what I don't want to do what God wants me to do at this point in my life. I just don't.
You know, for me, the biggest thing that I would make known to a person would be your purpose is bigger than you, right? So, I mean, realistically, when a person is not accepting what God has called them to do or their purpose that God has destined for them, it's usually, you know, one of two things, or maybe both. It's either they're afraid of what God has called them to, or they're not willing to give up the lifestyle that they're currently engaged in. And the reality is that I would tell a person, man, first of all, the lifestyle you're in right now can't even light a candle to what God has in store for you if you would just give him everything. That's number one. Number two, the lifestyle you're engaged in now, if it's hindering you from doing what God called you to, it's not for you. You understand what I'm saying? Man, Kevin, you know how much time I wasted, dude, trying to be somebody that God had not called me to be, trying to fit in with people who didn't even care about who I really was. So here's the deal. People loved me at the time, because people finally loved me at a certain point, right? But they didn't love me for me. They loved me for who I had become. That was not who God called me to be. And a lot of people struggling with acceptance because they're only projecting a certain facade and identity that's not even really them. It's what they want to portray in order to be accepted. That's not real love, man. That's not real friendship. These people don't really love you for you. They love the version of you that you're presenting.
Yeesh. That's great. That so identity wise. And again, like, you had to go through a lot of hoops to finally realize all of this.
Yes.
And I'm trying, but through this conversation, and this is one of the reasons I had you on, because I heard, you know, I saw that video, your testimony. Yes. And I'm essentially trying to save a lot of people some time and heartache and headache. And yes, because I know what you've been through, and you have this ability to speak words of knowledge to them. So yes, how do I... You know, if I'm in a place where it's like, man, me just being me is not working. Mm-hmm. Me just being who I feel like God has called me to be, for real. Mm-hmm. It ain't getting me nowhere. It's not, doors ain't opening up. I'm seeing everybody else, they out here wilding, doing whatever they want to do. Yeah. And they're being prosperous. Yeah. What gives me the strength, or what would make me want to walk into the calling of God when it just don't seem like that's profitable for me right now?
Well, the thing is that we have to understand that if everything else is not working, then why is it not working? There has to be an answer to that question, right? If everybody else is able to do a thing, but I'm the only one to me that cannot do it without it being an issue, that means I have not just been called by God, I have been chosen by God. Okay, many are called, but few are chosen. And so there's a duality to that statement. Number one, everybody's been called by God, But the ones that God has chosen have a different level of accountability, a different level of discipline, a different level of judgment than the average person. That's number one. The second side to that statement is everybody's been called, but the ones that God chooses are the ones that actually choose him. Okay. And so if it's not working out, you have to, there comes a point in time in your life where you as a person have to be real with yourself and say, none of this is working out. How much time am I going to waste pursuing something that's never going to pan out? You know what I'm saying? Reality, I wish I had a big answer, but the reality is that there has to be a reckoning with self at some point, right? Because a lot of people are not willing to be honest with themselves. And that's why they're constantly doing things. That's why they're constantly moving. They never take time to sit down and assess themselves. Because realistically, Kevin, people are afraid of what they'll find if they sit down and let it get quiet for 5 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, you're hitting a spot right there. So what is that? How do we get to that place where we can just be still? Because I mean, sometimes for me, sometimes I'm like, man, when I sit still, it's just like, and then, you know, you get distractions and all this stuff. Yeah. You know, I know people that it's just like you said, like the burden of sitting down and potentially being exposed to what's that deep down inside of you is scary. And so, what's on the flip side of that, basically?
If I can actually be real with myself for a second and just sit, right? What I will find on the other end of that sit down, it may be painful, truly. I'm going to be honest. Excuse me. You may have to unlearn some things. You may have to rediscover some things. You may even have to deal with some pains, some scars, or trauma that you never wanted to address. But on the other end of that, there is freedom and there is healing. And that's what we need more than anything, healing and freedom, right? Because the truth is everybody's searching for something, but you'll never find it if you never take the time to see what's blocking you from getting there. Okay. And we have to do that for ourselves. You know, I tell people all the time, serving Jesus Christ can't be for mama. It can't be for my boyfriend. It can't be for my girlfriend. It can't even be for my friends and my family. It has to be for me, because the reality is the only way I'll ever understand who Jesus Christ truly is if I give myself a chance to discover him.
That's real. I'm about to hang up this call and sit with him for a little bit right now. But no, man, thank you so much, seriously, for sharing your testimony and those words of wisdom. I want to end it with just leaving you to just, what do you feel led to just share? And again, I'm speaking, the whole purpose of this episode is to really just help some. I really just feel like, you know, there's people that are like lukewarm, and even some people that are just like, I don't even want to do this at all. But really, for those people that's like, man, I don't really want to walk into this. I like the world. I like doing this. I like not having to worry. I like, you know, I like the things. I like to be able to drink. I like to be able to do this. And I'm not, you know, but like, man, encourage, you know, I just ask you to just encourage that person that's like, why would I just waste, you know, this feels like a waste of time, or I want to live like this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, man, it's God is so timely, and you even having this convo with me is timely. This is what I say. What I want to say to every single person listening and watching, right, is this. I've been in your shoes. So I'm not talking to you from a place of Pastor Jonathan Baker or Apostle Jonathan Baker. I'm talking to you from a place of a person who can relate to where you are. I've been in that position where all I wanted to do was have a good time, drink, smoke, have sex outside of marriage, have a good time, because man, you only get one life. I even have YOLO tatted on me, dude. But the reality is, yes, you only live once in this ship. But when this is done, there's a whole nother life that's going to be lived. And you have only two places you can go. And here's the deal about that. How I live here determines where I spend the rest of my life for eternity. And I'm going to be real with you people. I was willing to sit down and say, I don't want to spend the rest of my life in hell in a place that was not designed for me to begin with, all because I was more concerned about having a good time in the temporary place. This is a temporary place. So no matter how many bottles we pop, no matter how many bottles we pop, no matter how many parties we attend, no matter how many clubs we're at, no matter how many women we have sex with or men we have sex with, all of that is going to be left in the temporary phase. And the difference between eternity and temporary is literally 1,000 to 1. So when you really think about it, the truth is none of this matters anyway if it's worth having fun over my destiny. Like, my purpose is way more important than a temporary time of having fun. Because the truth is, having fun and yet it being detrimental to my spirit, it's not really worth having. I mean, really. I mean, I've been there. But I can literally come back to you and tell you almost everything that I can recall from my past that was a good time. Man, in some shape, form, or fashion, 85% of what I did was detrimental for me in the long run. I ended up having to pay the price for that later. I ended up hurting someone else in the long run. I remember times, I'm just being transparent right before we leave. I just got to give this out as God has given it to me. I remember having sex with another dude's girl and feeling like the man because I'm like, he's never going to know. She's never going to tell him. And I could care less because I ain't got no commitment to her and I can do whatever I want to do afterward. And I felt like that dude. I was playing music that aided and abetted me. Like, what's that song by Pleasure P? Boyfriend number two. Playing music like that. All these things. I was, you know, having a good time. When the girl came to me and was like, I don't understand why you're acting this way. I really love you. I'm really da-da-da-da. I said, shorty, you have a whole nother dude. You know, of course, I use some other words. You have a whole nother dude. What you sweating me for? You can't tell me what to do. And then I went and tried to get it a friend. I was a different breed. But when I look back at that now, here's what I'm, every decision you make has a consequence. I have sons. I don't have daughters. And I want to have a daughter. When I have my daughter, what if my daughter runs into an old me?
That's real.
Because the Bible says, be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that shall he also reap. I'm not going to reap that. I'm in a relationship with my wife in a godly marriage. But my daughter may encounter an old me. A 2017 me or a 2014 me. You understand what I'm saying? So decisions we make, it affects your tomorrow. So my statement to the people is every decision you're making right now, somebody's going to have to pay for it. And if it isn't you, it's going to be somebody connected to you. So realistically, are you that selfish?
Man, that's great. And I feel like even just this back half, if nobody got nothing else, like, that is what, you know, it's so important. It's just like, man, even that made me think, like, even the things we don't do. So, like, even you not reading your word is affecting, even if it don't affect you somehow, it's affecting that person that needed the word that you were supposed to get. And you can't give it to them because you ain't got it. And, man, it also reminds me of just, like, and I encourage you all to read, just go through Ecclesiastes, where it just talks about meaning. Like, everything, all the stuff we do is meaningless. Yes. Like, when I read through Ecclesiastes the first time, first of all, I watched the Bible Project video about it, which I love the Bible Project. They break it down. So it's super dope. And then, reading it just makes you realize, like, yo, like you said, it's like 1,000 to 1, 10,000 to 1. Like, this life that we're living, all the things we stress about, we sweating over, meaningless. It's literally meaningless.
Vanity, man. I'm telling you, brother. And the truth is, man, we're in a place, we're in a day and age where time is ticking. Things have gotten worse, right? So for me, and this is just where I sit. Me 5 years ago, if I saw me 5 years later right now acting a fool still, I'd be like, boy, what's wrong with you? Because if you look around, Kevin, the signs of the times are here. It's not coming. They're here, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't dare be caught in my dead body doing half the stuff these cats out here doing, because reality is all you got to do is crack open the Bible one time and you'll see everything you read in reality, right? Yeah. It's bigger than a book, right? So my thing is, I'm telling every single lukewarm Christian, every carnal Christian, every unbeliever, listen, fam, that booty that you looking at, that twerking, that Pornhub category, that night out during All-Star Weekend, I guarantee you that's not worth eternity. And here's the deal. If I'm wrong, well, I can take that risk. But if I'm right, can you take that risk? Because there's only one or two places we can go, heaven or hell. And the choice is yours. Jesus died so you can make it in for the rest of your life in eternity in paradise with him and everybody that made it in. Hell was designed for the devil and his minions. Don't be a fool and go there.
Drops mic. Man, no, seriously, that is awesome. And I think I'm going to wrap it here. But really what I'm going to do after, you know, when I do my final recording at the end, I think I that just led me to even lead to a call of salvation, man. Because, I mean, especially after listening to this, if you listen to this and you like on the fence and you like, if you don't decide to give your life after the end, then, I mean, God's going to deal with you however he deal with you, of course. But I mean, it's super encouraging, even just for me as a strong believer to hear that from somebody like, yo, this man is here leading other people and he was once there. Yeah. And like, okay, it's possible for me, because sometimes, honestly, especially when we deal with sin, the thought is like, I have to deal with this forever. You know what I'm saying? This is just what I deal with. This is how my life goes. I mean, I know we're born in sin and shaped in iniquity. So like, I have to deal with this for the rest of my life. When you look at people like you, man, and it's like, God is real. Like, he can do whatever he wants with me as long as I'm willing. And so I think that's super awesome, man. And I'm just encouraged by your story. So you could just leave, you know, your personal social media, wherever the people can find you.
Oh yeah, definitely, man. So on Instagram and Twitter, my personal handle is TheApostleJB. That's for Jonathan Baker. So TheApostleJB. And if you're in the Atlanta area, please feel free to come worship with us. If you're not in the Atlanta area, please feel free to still get in touch with us, because we have an e-family and we have a lot of people from out of state that still are connected to us. And we're all about helping people find their identity in God and really growing in their relationship with God and with one another. So we're here. Nobody's too dirty. Nobody's too sinful. God can take the worst of the worst. I'm a walking testimony. So come on in, man, and let's get you to where you need to be in God.
Yo, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please do me a huge favor and leave a rating and a review, as this helps more people find and discover the show. Also, if you'd like to become a supporter of the show, please head to patreon.com/KevinWilson. And to keep up with us, follow us on Instagram @AChristianPodcast. Until next time, remember to make today worth living. Peace.